Okay, so I'll continue then in Kibbutz Galiot. I'll try to make it independent of what I said last week. Okay, so I'll try to give you some ideas here. So one of the interesting things about Kibbutz Galiot, the bracha of Kibbutz Galiot, is the following. It's very unclear, right? It's very unclear in the bracha whether the is Mashiach part of this, right? So if we think about this bracha begins a stage in Shmoneh Esrei that moves away from the personal bakasho to the national bakasho. So you have Kibbutz Galiot, you have Shoftim, right, which is a political return. You have Yerushalayim, you have Tzadikim, which, okay, fine, right, you have Mashiach. Vilam Al-Shinim obviously got added in later. But it's clearly some sort of more national-oriented thing. So one of the central questions, I think, to understanding this bracha, which is really more of a meta question about the mode of Mashiach in general, is what is the role that Mashiach is supposed to play in this process? Right? Because I think if you ask a lot of people who haven't maybe thought about it too much, they'll say, Mashiach will come and then we'll go back to Israel and we'll build a bit of Mikdash. Except if you follow the order that we have in the brachot, Kibbutz Galiot starts it, and Mashiach is until the very, very end. The Tzemach David is all the way at the end. So what does that tell us about the theology of the brachot here in terms of what does the Messianic era look like and what are we davening for? So here, I think you have 2.5 perspectives. Okay?
Okay.
Meaning, right, meaning 2 perspectives of which one of them divides into 2. Okay? One perspective is simply to say that the brachot, as they're presented here, do not present in order of how it's actually going to happen. It just divides up the elements because maybe conceptually they're distinct, but they're not in any sense historically distinct, and therefore we just divide them up, but really they are, right, all happening simultaneously. And this is really the position of the Avudraham. So the Avudraham says that Mashiach is the one who's going to bring about Kibbutz Galiot. Right? So he already reads Tzemach David back into Kabbash Shofar Gadol. So why is Tzemach at the end of Kabbash Shofar Gadol? He doesn't really explain. He just sort of says, like, right, he doesn't explain why he thinks they're a separate brachot.
I guess it wouldn't matter that to Avudraham, it wouldn't really matter that it's in the end. That Tzemach is toward the end. It doesn't seem to really make a difference either.
Correct. It doesn't matter, right? It's just, you know, it just is what it is, right? But this already assumes Mashiach in the process, and therefore, according to him, and the Reb Ben Yaakov goes even farther, right? The Reb Ben Yaakov is earlier than Avudraham, but less well known. Reb Ben Yaakov says that in one possibility, it could be the Kabbash Shofar Gadol, the Chirutenu, the Chirut is the ultimate Chirut of Tchiyat HaMeitim. Now this would throw off the chronology entirely, because Tchiyat HaMeitim is clearly the end of this process, and he's already reading the first bracha. So one perspective is to basically completely throw out the notion that this presents a order that builds. The other possibility is to say that no, this is in fact identifying different stages, because it's at least plausible that these will happen without the other stages. Now here, though, I think you could really divide it. I mean, what would it mean that would happen in stages? So this is really a view that is held very strongly by the religious Zionist world. The religious Zionist world believes. I don't know if you can say that the whole religious Zionist world, but many religious Zionist thinkers have developed this theology, which was made most famous by Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, but it's developed in many others, that the way Mashiach will be manifest is what he called kim'ah kim'ah. It's not a phrase he invented, but it's a phrase that he made famous in this context, that Mashiach, the Messianic period, will happen in stages, right? A little bit at a time. And therefore, it's completely plausible that you'll have, right, it's the same theology that created the phrase Reishit Tzmichat Gulatena, right, the beginning of the flowering of redemption, right, which is process oriented. And to be fair, even in Etzemach, the fact that we don't call Mashiach Mashiach, what do we call him in the bracha? Etzemach David Avdecha, the growth of David, which implies a process, right, that there is. So if you take that view, so then you can say that no, the reason that you talk about Kibbutz Galiot distinct from the return of sovereignty and of righteous sovereignty and of Yerushalayim and Mashiach is because the messianic process will unfold in stages, and whatever order they happen is not, right, doesn't necessarily assume that everything happens at once. So that's the second view. But I think within that view, you have to realize that there are different ways you could take this, because, and this comes back to our bracha, in Kibbutz Galiot, what are we davening for? So there's really two elements of Kibbutz Galiot. So one of the things we talked about last week was, in the Ashkenazi version at least, not the Sephardi version, what is very, very plainly missing from the bracha of Geula, of Tikkat B'Shofar Gadol that you thought should be there, of Kibbutz Galiot?
L'Artzeinu,
very good. In the Sephardi version it says L'Artzeinu, that we come back to Eretz Yisrael. That's not actually present in the Ashkenazi version, and that might be on purpose. Right? It might be that the Gemara, that with the Chazal, as the Ashkenazi tradition has it, are celebrating Kibbutz Galiot by itself. Right? But even within that, even if you think that L'Artzeinu is only part of it, but Kibbutz Galiot standalone is important and therefore part of the tefillah, there are still two elements to it. One is the return to each other, right? The unification of the Jewish people as an independent value. But the other is besides for the land. Right? There's the land, but there's really two parts of, even if you take the land out of the picture, there's two other components to it. One is the unification of the Jewish people, and the other is that the people will be unified behind God. And if you think about the language of the bracha, Tika b'shofar gadol, God is blowing the shofar, God is holding the nace, is holding the banner. There's a notion that this, whatever unity, we join together around God. So there's the spiritual element, and then this, whatever you want to call it, right? Nationalistic would imply the land, but that would be element three. But peoplehood, element of Kibbutz Galiot. So even if you think that Geula has happened in stages, you can still divide on what exactly the central point of this stage is. So traditionally, in some of the early religious Zionist writings, what you'll have is that the return to peoplehood and nationhood precede God, right? And therefore, there's spiritual value that we can recognize in secular Zionism, even if in the brachot, the world of Yerushalayim and Etzemach isn't yet around, or even Alat Tzadikim, there's independent value to the political unification of the Jewish people, eventually in the land, but even before that, right? So if you think about historically how the modern Zionist movement happened, it started with sort of a movement of the Jewish people together oriented towards the land of Israel. God isn't necessarily part of the equation, but that itself is at least a stage in the process. And this, I think, is, even though Rav Kook is not talking about the bracha, Rav Kook presented this idea in his eulogy of Herzl. Have you ever read it? So just a few lines of it. Now he adds to this. The way he imagined it was that the Gemara has this cryptic comment that in addition to Mashiach ben David, there is Mashiach ben Yosef before Mashiach ben David. Now Rav Kook took that more metaphorically, right? Not that there's necessarily a person Mashiach ben Yosef, but there is a correct. So But his idea about the Mashiach ben Yosef, as instantiated in Herzl, really gives you an idea of what it might look like to think that Tikkat B'Shofar Gadol, that valuing Jewish peoplehood, even before God, is fully in that picture, is a stage in the Geula that we daven for as a conceptually distinct idea from Yerushalayim, Mashiach, and all of that. So this is a translation of his eulogy. And he writes, "The Zionist vision manifest in our generation might best be symbolized as the footsteps of Mashiach ben Yosef." Right? Ikvita de Mashiach ben Yosef. A very early stage in this process. Zionism tends to universalism as opposed to Jewish particularism. It is unequipped to realize the development of Israel's general aspect is but the foundation for Israel's singularity. The leadership of the Zionist movement must be greatly influenced by the gifted few of the generation, the righteous and the sages of Israel. On the other hand, the ideal of Israel's national renaissance, including all the material accoutrement, which is the proper thing when joined to the spiritual goal, to date has not succeeded. And the lack of success has brought on infighting until finally the leaders of the movement has fallen a victim of frustration. It behooves us to take to heart to try to unify the Tree of Joseph and the Tree of Judah, to rejoice in the national awakening, and to know that this is not the end goal of Israel, but only a preparation. If Herzl died an untimely death at the age of 44, etc., preparation will not submit to the spiritual aspect, will not aspire to it, v'chulei. Right, this is the benefit of the remorse, the gain by the remorse over one who might be considered the footsteps of Mashiach ben Yosef in view of his influence in revitalizing the nation materially and generally. The power should not be abandoned despite the wantonness and hatred of Torah that results in the expulsion of God-fearing Jews from the movement. We must develop the courage to seek that any power that is itself good must be fortified, and if it is lacking spiritual perfection, let us strive to increase the light of knowledge and fear of the Lord, such that the light is capable of conquering a powerful life force and of building up through it. Then there will be fulfilled in the prophecy, I will grant unto Zion salvation, unto Israel my glory. Right? So Rav Kook basically said, look, we have the value, Herzl for what he is, for the independent value of the unification of the Jewish people oriented towards Israel, even without the spiritual element. That, if I put it back into the bracha, is recognizing the value of Kibbutz Galiot as a stage, even without the God part of it. You could have gone the opposite direction and said, yes, Etzemach is, you know, the end goal, and Tikkah is only a stage in the process, but the emphasis isn't just the unification of the Jewish people, but the spiritual process that's beginning. The fact that the Jews are lining up behind God, in which case you would not see, meaning you could accept Rav Kook's basically overarching view that Mashiach happens in stages, but you could think that without the spiritual component, it's valueless. So then you'd have, you know, in certain ways, diverge. That's why I said 2.5 views, right? Meaning accept sort of the process view, not the Avudraham collapsing view, but still differ on whether you would value political unification without, let's say, the land or without God. Now, Rav Avram ben Agra does also, for example, believe in the multiple stages, and he just notes that in some of them, God is mentioned, and some of them they're not. So in here, you could say that, no, the emphasis is not the fact that there's Kibbutz Galiot, but that we're unifying behind God, and that's supposed to be the first process, maybe even without land, even without Mashiach. But that, I think, is something that you really have to keep in mind in this bracha, which is that it's clearly process-oriented, but the question of what exactly the process it wants us to think about, again, one way of thinking about it is collapsing them, which is the Avudraham, Riben Yakar. The other is to say, no, Mashiach can happen in stages, and we value each stage independently, and then we can say, what is it that we're valuing? Is it the unity of the Jewish people by itself, or is it the spiritual mission that is being embraced by the Jewish people? So that's one central question. Again, last week, the questions I dealt with what is the shofar gadol, right? Why is the shofar so metaphorical? Why is that how we frame this bracha? I dealt with l'cheirutenu, right? What is this notion of cheirut here? So again, just, you know, for people who weren't here, I'll summarize some of the key ideas. But some of the ideas there were that cheirut, you could just say that it's assuming that there was subjugation in the areas of Galut, or you could say that, no, this is more metaphorical, like only in Israel or together with God or together as a Jewish people can we manifest our true identity. And then following in the footsteps of Isaiah Berlin, in a very famous article, he wrote, right, two types of freedom. Right, he talks about negative freedom, which is freedom from, and positive freedom, which is freedom to. Negative freedom meaning freedom from oppression, and freedom too, which is the freedom to actualize self and actualize goals. Right? It could be that that's what l'cheirutenu means. It's not just free us, right? That may be what we're talking about, but it could be that this bracha is already getting us forward to l'cheirutenu. Now, some of the ideas that we just mentioned, I think, can be seen, and I think I touched on this last week, but I'll run through it quickly, in the question of what exactly is this nes, right? One of the imageries of this bracha is that we'll gather behind the nes gadol, right? This banner, So what exactly is the message of the banner? So in light of what we've just said, so Rabik, in his article, just says, well, a banner implies that we're gathering around something. And who is holding, so to speak, the banner?
God.
And therefore, the point of the nace here is to emphasize, unlike the sort of Rav Kook view, that there's value here to the political unification of the Jewish people, even if God's not there, that no, maybe the emphasis of the bracha is dafka, the spiritualized side, that we're behind God. But on the other hand, you could just think, and this is found in the Siach Yitzchak, that no, you could just say that why do you have a nace? Because you need a gathering point. Because you're going up to Israel as a unified people. Meaning, the whole point is that you're not going to Israel and gathering there, is that you're gathering to go to Israel. And the emphasis of nace is to point out that we're gathering on our way to Israel, in which case you could interpret this much more as emphasizing the political unity. The third point in that is, and this is really fleshed out by Rabbi David Aaron, is the notion that perhaps what the nace adds is maybe it's better translated as like a parade banner, right? That what it's adding is that whatever exactly you're talking, whether you think this is the political or the spiritual or going to Israel or whatever you think, it is a celebration. And therefore, it's not just that you're gathering, but that you are, it's a, you're parading right back to wherever you are going. Okay, another central idea that Mefarshim try to figure out here is who are we davening for to be part of this kibbutz galiyot? Right, who are these people? So here you have, you know, several logical possibilities. So one possibility is that it's only people who deserve to come back. And this could be interpreted from the psukim in Yeshayahu, from which we get our bracha, and where it's talking about people who are doing tshuva coming back. It's possible that, however, this is not true. In any other mefarshim, so if you look at like in the Sefer Achrit Shalom, he says no. Maybe we have different possible returns. It could be, the way he reads it, is that in earlier bracha we say, that he notes that in this bracha we don't say, in this bracha we say, Amo Yisrael, but in Re'e Vanyenu, which is also ostensibly about Geula, we don't say, Amo Yisrael. And he says, what's the difference between just saying Yisrael and Amo Yisrael? He said, it might be that we're asking God, look, there's a possible Geula in which all the people who are saved deserve to be brought back. And a stage in which you don't. We don't deserve it. We're just brought back because we're Yisrael. And that maybe both of these ideas are implicit in the bracha. And, you know, we talked about this, if you remember, a long time ago in Atta Kadosh, the notion that maybe the reason that God would save us even if we don't deserve it is because we represent God's name, whether we like it or not, right? Allah Moshe saving us after the Egel. Now, where are these Jews coming from? So the pasuk that is based on in Yeshayahu says that they're coming from Uvoha Ovdim Eretz Ashur V'Nidachem Eretz Mitzrayim. Now, presumably, that doesn't just mean Ashur and Mitzrayim. As Dot Mikra points out there, Ashur and Mitzrayim were the two major superpowers. It just means from everywhere. But there is an idea that appears in many of the Rishonim. This is Ibn Ezra there in Yeshayahu and others, is the belief that what we're asking is not just for all Jews to come back, but more specifically, we're asking for Jews to come back and undo the split that happened in the Jewish people between Ephraim and Yehuda, right? Between the Malchut Yisrael and the Malchut Yehuda. And that's what we're arguing for, not just bring all Jews back, but specifically heal the fractures that existed politically in the Jewish people. Rav Ben Agra suggests that there are multiple stages to this, and he says that first, in the first stage, he says just like in Galut, there were several stages, right? First, the 10 tribes were exiled on the Sanhedrin, and then there were multiple rounds of the Jews being kicked out of. Eretz Yisrael, right? The first Galut, right? Yechezkel is already in Bavel, even though the Beit HaMikdash is not destroyed. And then, you know, the later kings, and then eventually everybody. So he says that maybe all of those multiple stages are being alluded to here, that basically reverse all of those galuyot. That ha'ovdim me'eretz Ashur, he thinks, is our prayer to undo the galut Sancheiriv, which was Assyria. Nidachim eretz Mitzrayim, he thinks, is Yehuda and Binyamin, who went out later. Now he thinks that Tikabashofar Gadolach Hirutenu is even those who are hidden behind the Sambatyon, which is the mystical, you know, river where the some of the ten Shvatim are hidden behind, in the Harei Choshech. Now what's interesting is that this idea isn't just something that people put in tefillah, but it's actually something they implement l'maisa. So for example, Rav Ben Agra thinks that Sanes L'Kavetz Galiotenu refers to the tribes that are known of Jews that exist everywhere in the world, including in India. And Gatzei Yachad Me'arakan V'aretz means, you know, everybody who's scattered around the Galut, and the Bracha is really focusing on that last phrase. Now there's a machloket in the Gemara whether the ten tribes will ever return. Rabbi Kiva thinks they won't, Rabbi Lezer thinks they will, or this Gemara in Sanhedrin, Kuf Yud Amud Bet, which is partially based on the halachic question of whether, or the Gemara in Yevamot said that if you marry a non-Jew, you don't have to be choshesh that they're really one of the Aseret HaShvatim, and get misafek. The Gemara says, why not? Right? I mean, why not? So the Gemara answers, because lo zazu misham atche nasu akum gemurim, that the Chazal paskan they were not Jewish. Now there's a machloket. Rashi says that just means that rov, they really are Jewish, but you don't have to worry about that for kedushin purposes because of rov. But you can't lose Jewishness. But the Gaonim really thought you could lose Jewishness. And that's what they think it meant, that they actually removed their Jewishness. Now, that machlokes manifests in, do you think that really we're going to bring back the Aseret HaShvatim? Right? Meaning all these pshatim that assume you can bring back the Aseret HaShvatim are paskening that the Aseret HaShvatim are coming back, that they're still Jewish. Right? If you take the Gaonic view, or you take the Rabbi Kiva view, they're never coming back. But what's interesting is that this has become a movement. And you've probably heard of some of these. And again, we can go through a lot of the history. It's fascinating. But, you know, there are people, for example, there's an organization, Shvut Yisrael, which is devoted to bringing back the B'nai Menashe, right, which are a group of Indians who believe that they are Jewish. There obviously was a tremendous amount of effort in bringing back the Ethiopians, right, who had been split from the Jewish world for many thousands of years, and believed that they were descended from the original, right, Jews, and thought they'd gone to the time of Shlomo. And some of the people who are involved in this actually basically see their theology captured in this bracha, right? Because they say, look at all the views in Chazal and in the Rishon Menachon, they're captured in this bracha, that we're bringing back the Aseret HaShvatim, we're bringing back all those people. Right? We say this every day, and they see their mission of bringing these Jews back as the fulfillment of the theology captured in this bracha. So, for example, Rabbi Yo Birnbaum, who is one of the Rabbanim who's involved in the return of these B'nai Menashe in India, he calls his article on to explain why he is devoted to this, Ha'ovdim Be'eretz Ashur, right? Which is clearly invoking the pasuk that this bracha is based on. And he notes that Rav Kook and Rav Tzadok HaKohen both say that part of the Geula is bringing back the Jews who don't even know they're Jewish. Shavei Yisrael is what he calls it. I think that's another element that's worth thinking about, right? So the points you've made today, one is this notion, there's really two very different ways of thinking about this bracha. Right, as everything's happening together, and Kibbutz Gal is just one aspect, but obviously Mashiach's here, we're saying no, it happens in stages. The next question of being, who's coming back? Is it only people who deserve it, or no? It's everybody, maybe even the Aseret HaShvatim, the ones who are, you know, scattered to the ends of the earth, and realizing that some of the more extremely inclusive views are not just going to lead to a particular perspective in Tefillah, but for many that actually led to Lamaisa, the way that they orient their lives and beliefs about, you know, what activities we should be involved in. So a bracha like this, it's not just, you know, important to understand the bracha because we're davening. You have to realize the theology that's all captured in it. You know, especially when you're living in a period that many people view as this beginning of the process, it the perspectives you put into this bracha or take out of this bracha go beyond just the sitter and into the way people live their lives, which is, again, I think, a critical a point here. And the last thing that, again, just to articulate, because we already intimated, but let's run through this quickly. As I said, what's very pointedly not in this bracha is the notion of Israel. So what does that tell us about Kibbutz Goliath? So again, it could be that it's just obvious, hence the Nusach Sfarad version, that you come la'arsenu, right? That's part of the girsa in the Sfaradi version. But in the Pasuk, in Yeshayahu Chav Zayin, it's not there. Right? Vaya bayomahu yitaka b'shofar gadol v'ahu v'avdim be'eretz ashur v'nechem eretz v'shayim yishtachavu l'anay b'har ha'kodesh b'yushalayim. And there, the only things that are mentioned are Kibbutz Goliath and Yerushalayim. Right? But not Israel in the middle. Which, again, I think is part of the evidence that perhaps this is a standalone value, the Kibbutz Goliath, independent of Israel. It's also interesting that even in the Pasuk, it seems to be that the ultimate goal of Kibbutz Goliath is not, if you read the Pasuk Kipshuto, is not Eretz Israel, it's the spiritual element manifest in Yerushalayim. And it could be that the more political element, which is manifest in Israel, not Yerushalayim per se, maybe that's implicit in this bracha or not. Maybe that's implicit in Hashiva Shoftenu, because that's where the political system will be set up. Right? But it could be that the reason the Pasuk emphasizes Kibbutz Goliath and Yerushalayim is to emphasize the extent to which Kibbutz Goliath is a standalone value, and the fact that the ultimate goal of that isn't just political leadership, which may be in the middle, but as Yerushalayim, and it could be that all the middle brachot and Shemona Esrei are telling us that yes, we start with unifying the Jews behind God, and we end by manifesting that with Mashiach and the Beit HaMikdash. That's your starting point, that's your end goal. What happens in the middle is obviously going to happen, but you have to understand that these are standalone. And again, there are Mefarshim who really do think that, to highlight this, we believe that we're going to gather as Jews and only then return to Israel. Again, for many people it's obvious that this is talking about Israel, because otherwise what's the value? But I think it's worth thinking about the possibility that's not the only way of understanding this. And I'll just note that some have pointed out as well that, you know, part of the reason it might be worthwhile to realize the independent value and unification of the Jewish people is to remember that even without the state of it, right, even without a nation state, as the Jewish people, we manifest God's name in this world. And if you just read the Pasuk, one way of reading it is, look, we need to bring back Kibbutz Goliath, because when the Jewish people are together, they can represent God. Right? That could just be an overarching thing that you're supposed to get about from the bracha, in addition to all the political elements in Israel. And the fact that the Pasuk and the Brachot go out of the way to not really mention Israel might highlight the way to which these elements really do stand alone. Okay, so those are just some ideas on Tikva B'Shofar Gadol. Obviously, to fully understand this bracha, you need to go through the full theology of Chazal on Mashiach and the like, but I think it's worthwhile even just noting the elements that come up in the bracha and what is highlighted and what's dafka not highlighted, even if you believe it's going to happen, and what that tells us about the way we value the relative stages and aspects of Yemei Mashiach.